in Al-Aqsa, which is also the first martyr from Hanzul Nun camp. It is a very modest sacrifice for the sake of Palestine and the heroic people of Gaza.
We, the sons of the Islamic Jihad in Hanzul Nun camp, assure our people in Palestine that we stand firmly with them and with the resistance. Our hand is on the trigger until the end and to the last breath.
Meanwhile, inside the Zainab city, a solidarity event was held in support of Palestine, where families of the Palestinian resistance martyrs were honored. In turn, families hailed martyrdom as the only path to victory. Participants expressed confidence in the victory of Gaza, emphasizing that the Palestinian cause will always thrive throughout generations.
As outrage grows in the region due to the escalation of Israeli crimes, Syrians and Palestinians reaffirm their support for Gaza in the face of the Israeli aggression and their determination to achieve victory, no matter how great the sacrifices are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, has delivered a much-anticipated televised speech in which he stressed that the Yemeni military will continue targeting Israel. After condemning some Arab and Islamic countries for not taking a meaningful stance against the Israeli regime, al-Houthi made it clear that Yemen is determined to take decisive military action that will eventually force the Zionist aggression to stop.
Our brothers in the armed forces have begun their work and carried out a number of operations with long-range missiles deep into the south of Israeli-occupied lands. We also use drones to target Israeli Zionist targets there. We will continue our bombardment and we will continue to march for Palestine. We are also planning for additional military operations against all Zionist targets in Palestine and outside of Palestine.
Al-Houthi declared that from now on, all Israeli ships passing through Yemeni territorial water will be targeted in the Red Sea, a move which would prove to be very costly, since trade through the Red Sea constitutes 90% of Israel's imported goods.
Our eyes are open for constant monitoring and searching for any Israeli ships. Everyone should know that the Israeli enemy relies on its movement in the Red Sea, especially in Bab al-Mandab, where they try to camouflage their ships by not raising Israeli flags on them. It's a smuggling mission because they even turn off the identification devices on board. Despite this, they will not succeed. We will search until we verify the ships that belong to the Israeli regime, and we will not hesitate to target them.
Yemen's continuous military strikes against Israel come after U.S. officials directed a warning to Yemen to not intervene in Israel's brutal war on Gaza. But according to al-Houthi, Yemen doesn't take its orders from America. As you can see on this map over here, Bab al-Mandab is a very narrow strait that separates Yemen from the Horn of Africa. This means any ship that passes through Bab al-Mandab will be within the target zone of Yemen's armed forces. And as Sayyid Abd al-Malik al-Houthi has stated, all Israeli shipments will be targeted if they attempt to pass. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
In Gaza, the situation is getting worse, no longer by the day, but by the hour. Incessant Israeli bombardments and its refusal to lift a crippling blockade on the enclave has led to a humanitarian disaster as described by the ICRC. More than half of the hospitals in Gaza have closed down. The situation is described as intolerable by Iranians who have supported the Palestinian resistance from day one. On the streets of Tehran, people are calling this an unbearable human tragedy unfolding before their very eyes.
We have them in any way, shape, or form that we can. The entire world is watching silently, and even Western countries, and the U.S. in particular, are blatantly supporting the Zionists as they commit these atrocities. the Palestinians are our Muslim brothers and sisters, and we have to do everything we can do to help them.
The most barbaric scenes that one could imagine are coming out of Gaza. I couldn't sleep the night as I saw images of a hospital in Gaza where a young child pulled from under the rubble was all alone crying. He was probably the only one left from his family, just like many other kids there. How can the world do nothing? All countries should call for an immediate ceasefire.
I can't believe that in year 2023 we are witnessing such atrocities. It is completely unbelievable. No one is trying to stop the Zionists. Why? Just because Palestinians don't have blonde hair and blue eyes? Just because they are Muslims? They deserve to be treated this way. We saw how all these countries who are now supporting Israel were vocal when it was all about Ukraine.
Currently, over 9 million Iranians have signed up to go to Gaza to help Palestinians in their fight for freedom.
Does international law mean anything at all, or it is just for some countries to benefit from? History will judge them. Such atrocities are completely unprecedented. I never thought that I would be seeing such images. How can they call themselves humans? How can the rest of the world just sit and watch and do nothing? Everyone should demand an immediate ceasefire and humanitarian help for Palestinians. I would go to help them if I could.
When I see these images, I feel nauseous. All these young, innocent children. Why do they have to suffer? They haven't done anything wrong. They need humanitarian help immediately.
Children, hospitals, schools, according to international law, they should not be attacked. But we see now how they are bombarded every day. There should be an immediate ceasefire. Israelis have absolutely no shame. They call themselves human. Them and all those who support these atrocities. The U.S. The international community now knows the truth about them. Them and their so-called human rights.
Israel waged a war on Gaza on October 7th. At least 11,000 Palestinians have been killed in the strikes, most of them women and children, while 27,000 others have been injured. Tel Aviv has also imposed a complete siege on Gaza, cutting off fuel, electricity, food and water to more than 2 million Palestinians living there.
Iranians are appalled by the images coming out of the Gaza Strip showing the atrocities of the Zionist regime. They are also shocked that Western countries led by the United States are supporting the Israeli regime. Iranians are calling for an immediate ceasefire and immediate humanitarian help for the people in Gaza. Hizumi Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
The first international congress in tribute to the father of Iran's missile program, Hassan Tehrani Muqaddam, was held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. The event also marked his 12th martyrdom anniversary. Senior military and state officials attended the ceremony to honor his lofty status and unique role in the missile program of the country.
Martyr Tehrani Muqaddam opened the chapter of self-reliance in the defense industry and put an end to the thoughts of unwilling people who said we don't have the strength to compete in any industry. He believed that we can and thus became the father of Iran's missile program.
Tehrani Muqaddam, a commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, was a key figure in Iran's ballistic missile program. An engineer by profession, he designed the Shahab, Qadr and Sajil missiles with a range of over 1,000 kilometers. Tehrani Muqaddam began establishing Iran's missile program when the country was under attack during the eight-year Iraqi imposed war on Iran. He continued his efforts to boost the program in subsequent years amid difficulties and shortages.
Today, we're at the peak of military power, and we have prepared ourselves for all situations. Today, we're not only at the world level in the field of missiles, but also in drones, space, defense, radar, and other sectors. For such achievements, we have used the model of Shahid Tehrani Muqaddam.
Tehrani Muqaddam was martyred in an explosion in November 2011. The blast came during a missile test at a base in Bidgane, west of Tehran. At least 16 others were also killed in the blast.
Observers say the West's efforts to stop Iran's missile program over the past couple of years reveals the significance of Tehrani Muqaddam's legacy, which serves as Iran's main power. of deterrence. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
After 5 weeks of shocking war crimes, official Western pressure is finally mounting on Tel Aviv. French President Emmanuel Macron admitted in an interview that Israel's actions have, quote, no legitimacy. He added, quote, these babies, these ladies, these old people are bombed and killed, so there is no reason for that. So we do urge Israel to stop. Citizen pressure on Tel Aviv continues with marches worldwide, with over 10,000 marching across Paris.
Macron has to finally extend actual support to the Palestinians and force Israel to accept a ceasefire. This is an attempt at genocide, and there are children dying every day.
The deliberate targeting of civilians has left over 11,000 Palestinians murdered, which is more dead civilians in 1 month than in over 1.5 years of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. Many say that Israel's 75-year-long brutality, repression, and human rights violations are out in the open like never before, and that things will never be the same.
Global opinion has changed because all these videos on Twitter and Instagram make it crystal clear who the aggressor is. And the double standard with Ukraine is also obvious. The French government constantly cried that this was a scandal, but then they remained silent as Gazans die day and night.
Israel has increased their bombing and murder in Lebanon, further sparking the possibility of a major multinational war.
As Lebanese, firstly, we're concerned by the crisis that's happening in Gaza, because Lebanon was previously occupied by Israel in 1982. Beirut was the second Arab capital occupied by Israel. And so we've had the bitter taste of occupation before by the Israelis. Currently, south of Lebanon is under attack by Israel. This conflict can turn into a regional conflict with Hezbollah getting involved, Israel instigating Lebanese parties, the Syrians, the Iranians, the Yemenis into this conflict.
This week, at the first Western-hosted summit on Palestine, Macron said the clear conclusion was that, quote, there is no other solution than a humanitarian pause and then going on to a ceasefire, end quote. Marchers here hope that Washington and Tel Aviv listen to the sound of the global chorus. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Tens of thousands of people have marched through the streets of Cape Town to the office of the provincial administration. They have called on the South African government to support the oppressed Palestinians. The government has downgraded ties with Israel, but protesters want a complete severing of relations.
The West continuously put the narrative through Hamas terrorist group. Hamas is a resistance group for the liberation. In South Africa, when we fought against the apartheid regime, we were called liberators. We were supported when we fought against the apartheid regime. When they do it, when Hamas do it, they call them terrorists.
The march was organized by a broad coalition of organizations, including religious bodies, Jewish groups, political parties, including the ruling ANC, and trade unions. South Africa's government has withdrawn its diplomatic staff from Tel Aviv, but it still plays host to the Israeli ambassador, something people here are not happy with.
This has been described as the mother of all marches. It is probably the biggest demonstration that South Africa has hosted since the outbreak of the latest violence in occupied Palestine. Protesters say they will continue to come out onto the streets until the South African government takes decisive steps to expel the Israeli ambassador.
People must pressure government into action at times. This is but one of those pressures. Cape Townians have shown that they are with the people of Palestine. Their government must take another step further. The government of the ANC must do that.
But even with the inaction of politicians, and while South Africa's Christian party, the ACDP, is standing fully behind Israel, increasingly those who follow the faith are seeing for themselves how the Bible is being abused.
The God that I pray to would never condone what is going on in Palestine, and that's why we're here today, to show our support. How do you feel as a Christian?
This was the reaction of these women when I asked about the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's use of biblical scripture to justify the massacres.
think when it comes to the Bible, I mean, we live by our teachings, but it can be, anyone can take the Bible and twist what God's word says into what they want it to mean. And I think that's exactly what's happening with Netanyahu. I mean, he's basically doing what he wants and trying to justify it by twisting what the scriptures say.
The protests are growing bigger and more diverse. For every Palestinian the American-backed Israeli war machine kills, another voice rises against it. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need, which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
UN has finally passed a binding resolution calling for pauses in the Israeli war on Gaza. Israel has objected while it continues targeting the Al-Shifa hospital, presenting false evidence of a Hamas presence, falling way short of it being a command and control node or center. Meanwhile, the U.S. continues to reject the ceasefire, while other allies like France are objecting to Israel's tactics, especially in the occupied West Bank, calling the settler violence a policy of terror aimed at displacing Palestinians. Let's find out what our guest thinks. Let me introduce them. Elijah Magnier is a journalist and political analyst joining us from Brussels. Also joining us is Daniel Jedic, author and researcher, who joins us from Beirut. Welcome to you both. I'm at a loss to know where to start with you, Elijah Magnier, because we're seeing things here that defy logic. So let me start with one of them, which is the way that Israel is going about exercising its military, capabilities. We're looking at the way that it is targeting hospitals, in particular right now, the Al-Shifa Hospital. We know what it's done to the previous facilities, medical facilities. We still see the death toll rising incrementally. But we don't really see the stated goal of this operation, which was to eradicate Hamas. I don't recall the last time, really, that Israel has said this many Hamas fighters have been taken out, along with this many of their equipment. They have made that announcement, but very far and in between. And that has actually put into question, which is my question to you, the real stated goal of this military incursion, which has been called a genocidal war. Is their intent just to kill Palestinians, do you think?
Thank you for having me. So the objective is far from being to defeat Hamas or to liberate all the captives, because both objectives are impossible to achieve with military means. And the Israeli government and all their allies are fully aware that these objectives are not achievable. Therefore, the undeclared objective of the Israelis are three things, really. First, to kill the largest number of the Palestinians and scare them for those who want to remain, to leave, to trigger another exodus. Secondly, is to create a buffer zone in the north of Gaza, to remove everything from north of Gaza, destroy everything, and then create an area where it's unlivable. And third, to try and bring back the state of uncertainty to the settlers, that they feel totally uncertain and they've lost all the trust in the Israeli occupation forces and their government. By doing so, they could not declare the clear objective from the start. Otherwise, the international community will stand against this ethnic cleansing and will feel embarrassed to support Israel further with a declare objectives. However, by killing slowly the Palestinians, creating more than 11,300 Palestinian killed, mainly children and women, by destroying the infrastructure, cutting water, electricity, fuel, and medical supply, and creating genocidal killing inside Gaza Strip under the watchful eye, impotent eyes of the United Nations and the international community, Israel have already achieved that by showing its murderer type that derives from its nature of coming from a terrorist organization since 1931, before the announcement of its creation. So the objective today is no longer to destroy Hamas, because that's impossible, but is to create a large buffer zone in the north of Gaza so the settlers can return and feel safe. However, controlling this site, being able to occupy it is one thing from the military objective, and controlling it is a completely different thing.
Sure. We're going to discuss that, hopefully, if we have time, a little bit further. All right, Daniel, let me ask you about this Al-Shifa hospital that's been targeted, and then the show that Israel put on in terms of what they found there. There was a press conference a couple hours back where Osama Hamdan, one of the senior Hamas representatives in Lebanon, that he described with some of the props that he had, how it fell way short, the Israeli presentation of what it had discovered. Why don't you tell us your impression of what they showed? Because any analyst that has posted anything on this is saying that this was just fabricated, that this alleged discovery of weapons is entirely false. What's your take on it?
It very much represents the general Israeli policy of trying somehow to create narratives that could potentially justify these war crimes and genocidal aggressions. And it was very clear, of course, that the Israeli regime has now tried to create some sort of what they refer to as proof or evidence, which, again, appears very artificial. And almost, you know, the Israeli regime making fun of everyone else and ridiculing the rest of the world by staging, so on the one hand, of course, having this genocidal aggression on Gaza that killed more than 10,000 people, and the number of deaths hasn't even been updated in the last days due to this communication blackout, and then at the same time trying somehow to create audiovisual pictures, whatever sort of material, in a very desperate attempt to try to justify their actions, which are completely unjustifiable, not only from any moral or ethical consideration, but also under international law. So it's very much ridiculous what the Israeli regime is trying to do. And again, it's trying, I think, to address its Western audiences, because the bit support that the Israeli regime still gets is in fact not from people or from the masses, but from North American and European political elites, mostly from the right wing, but depending on the place throughout the political spectrum. So it is obviously very desperate communications propaganda attempt, but again, very representative of what the Israeli regime generally does, which is to actually ridicule its victims, even after killing them and massacring them and trying to convert them again into this category of terrorist, which basically has no meaning whatsoever except for defining anyone who is against this Zionist settler colonial genocidal regime. So the question really is what the Israeli regime is trying to even attempt with this ridiculous propaganda.
Well, that's the question, isn't it, Elijah Magnier? On top of that, you have the U.S. that says we have complete faith in what Israel has in the Al-Shifa hospital in terms of it being a control and command center, that they have intel to that effect that would support it. First of all, where is that intel that the U.S. is talking about? But aside from that, some are saying that they're just copying the Israelis instead of actually presenting the evidence that they have. But whatever Israel presented fell way short of what it claimed to be, which was this command and control node. It didn't even come close to it. So then the question is, why go through with the presentation if you agree? And then doesn't that corner Israel? Because they keep saying, we'll have more evidence to show you that'll make you believe that this is a command and control center.
Well, it corners Israel if Israel is held accountable for its murder and genocidal attacks. But because the Israelis are not held accountable for anything they are doing, notwithstanding violating all international laws, being accused of committing crimes against humanity, war crimes, and ethnic cleansing, what is very strange in this war. I mean, we know the Americans are always supportive of whatever Israel is doing and protecting it, particularly the United Nations, and offering and sending weapons. But this time, they've sent special forces, they sent carriers, but above all, they did not refer back to their intelligence, to the U.S. intelligence. On the contrary, they are just recycling exactly the same Israeli intelligence based on a lie. So when President Biden confirms that there are Hamas headquarters under the Shifa Hospital, when John Kirby, the spokesperson of the National Security and the spokesperson of the Pentagon, all of them confirm, quoting intelligence information, independent intelligence information, although they confess they have no boots on the ground, that they are sure that Hamas has its headquarters under the Shifa Hospital. And all that resulted in a lie, and they, in theory, they should feel embarrassed. However, they're not, because we are accustomed to the Americans and the Israelis to wage many wars in the Middle East, and at the maximum we've heard, like Tony Blair saying, I'm sorry, after being part of the killing of 1 million Iraqi, and the Americans and the Israelis don't really need to say they are sorry. They can continue doing business as usual, and nobody is going to render them accountable. Therefore, being exposed in their lies, but not only by Hamas, the entire social media community is really finding very ridiculous the way that the Israeli occupation forces are presenting these fake evidence. And then they delete their tweet, they recycle again what they have exposed in the beginning. And then in the whole of 45,000 meter of the Shifa Hospital, they found a few AK-47 in the IRM room, where it is impossible to have metals in that room. So everything is really a bad taste propaganda. But again, because they're not accountable, they can do it.
Lee Zangler, author and political activist, joining us from Montreal. And also spokesperson of the Masar Baril movement, Mr. Khalid Barakat, joining us from Vancouver.
Yeah, and they say that they've targeted 10,000, targets inside the Gaza Strip. And many are saying those were civilians that they killed. Anyways, let's move on to what many are not focused on. Many, meaning either the media altogether or that perhaps the eyes have been taken off the tense situation that exists. And Daniel, that's on the in the occupied territories, in the occupied West Bank. Israel is just moving ahead with its policy of either incursions, which have resulted in deaths so far for the year, so far since October 7th, 190 Palestinians killed. We have for the year, in terms of demolitions, 890 to have taken place. And we're seeing on for the first time, it happened months ago, where a drone was used in the Al Janin refugee camp. We're seeing the use of a drone again that had struck a refugee camp, it's resulting in deaths. Where do you see that situation going? Because we know the way that the settlers specifically and overall Israelis are encouraged to act out against the Palestinians. Are they looking to, ultimately my question being, are they looking to uproot Palestinians even from the West Bank? Is that one of their goals?
This is absolutely one of the goals, to at least reduce the land on which Palestinians remain to be living, and of course to further enforce new dimensions of their policies of control and coercion, which is part and parcel of the Israeli settler colonial project. And as we already mentioned, there is, of course, a lack of accountability. There is no one to hold the Israeli regime accountable. So why would they stop with these atrocities that are not just restricted to Gaza, but as you mentioned, ongoing in the West Bank, where there are continuous increases in not only the continuity, but also the intensity of Israeli crimes and Israeli violence against Palestinian civilians, both by the Zionist settler state as well as the armed settlers, which collaborate in their violence against Palestinians. And of course, at the same time, the Israeli regime is on somehow also in a quite desperate position militarily, because as we see in Gaza, its strategy is to kill everyone and bomb, literally to commit a genocide. And a lot of this aggression is mirrored in the West Bank, where the Israeli regime is increasing the techniques it uses in the coercion and the killing of Palestinians, of course, to further enhance their presence there. But of course, we need to keep in mind that the entire structure of the Israeli colony is built on the idea to continuously advance and take more land away from Palestinians. And part of the strategy that has been used in the West Bank is by turning the entire West Bank into enclaves that are separated from one another with Israeli checkpoints and a heavy Israeli military presence. So it seems very likely that this current situation provides another advantage for the Israeli regime, or another opportunity to further expand its terrorist tactics into the West Bank.
Well, we are looking at Elijah, the West Bank, and in particular the refugee camps, to suffer these incursions, which has resulted in deaths. But how do you see the possibility of, after the Gaza war, at some point, once it's over, for there to be an uptick, as we've seen it already be, in terms of the regime forces targeting the Palestinians, and for there to then be a spike in terms of the Palestinian deaths and murders? We have already seen that happen from October 7th. Once that war is over, I think this is not a new front, but the continuation of the old, but at a higher pace in terms of the regime forces moving in on Palestinians. Do you see it that way?
Well, we have seen this conflict going on for the last 75 years. This is not the first war on Gaza, although this is the first time this scale of destruction Gaza is facing, and a possible ethnic cleansing as well from Gaza. But we have seen an ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian. And if you look at Gaza, it's made of all refugee camps that left and escaped from other parts of Palestine. Now, I think the Palestinians need to really carefully consider the United Nations Article 55, that consider Israel doesn't have the right to defend itself because it is an occupation forces. This is where it takes us to the legitimacy of the Palestinians to defend themselves and be considered as a resistant forces. Under the ruling of Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank, we have seen how the Israelis have abused and have killed the Palestinians indiscriminately, even in an area under the control of a president that is in very good terms with the Israelis and with the Americans. But this president is unable to protect his population. There are 2,700 Palestinians since the beginning of this conflict on the 7th of October that were arrested from the West Bank. So we understand that Mahmoud Abbas has around 50,000 police officers whose main job is to arrest the Palestinian resistance. Now, if the Palestinian resistance will not understand that they are all inside this problem as one hand, and that they are indeed a resistance with the UN legitimizing their right to defend themselves, I think Israel will consider this war as business as usual and then will return to what Benjamin Netanyahu showed us, if he remains or not in power, that is arguable, that on the map that he presented in the United Nations, the West Bank and Gaza, they disappeared. So the people, all the Palestinians in the West Bank should take an example of Gaza, not because of the destruction that Israel has inflicted, but to create a state of insecurity for the settlers so they understand they cannot get away with robbing the Palestinian territory and think they can come from all over the world and occupy any land they want while they are watching their brother in Gaza killed. I think the West Bank needs to do exactly what Gaza did and need to really abide by the United Nations Article 55 and consider themselves as a resistance and act as such, because the Israelis will kill them slowly but surely.
But and that's within their right, isn't it, Daniel, that the resistance and even an armed struggle is against the colonial occupation is within the confines of law. And it's not just recognized, actually, by international law, but it's actually specifically endorsed. And I think looking at the different options, there is none. The international community can't stop Palestinians from being slaughtered. You have the UN, helpless there. You have, unfortunately, Arab countries. They haven't stepped in the way they should. So where can Palestinians then look to, except for the fact that maybe the armed struggle is within their right to obviously fight against the occupying regime?
Exactly, and this is enshrined in several UN resolutions that grant very clearly people under military occupation the right to resist against this military occupation with all means at their disposal, including armed struggle. And as you pointed out, there is effectively no mechanism in the international community or no institution, or at least no actually functioning dimension of such institution that would protect Palestinians, not just from the current genocide that is being carried out in Gaza, but in general of the settler colonial policies, the apartheid regime, and the military occupation. So the question really is, what are Palestinians supposed to do? And there are obviously the Israeli regime, just by existing in the current structures in which it exists, it continues to violate several UN resolutions on a daily basis. So, and if we again look into history, there is no movement, there is no indigenous people that has been liberated by waiting for the UN to intervene or by having peace, so-called peace talks and negotiations with their oppressor while they are being a victim of genocide. And so, of course, the armed struggle, and in fact, we also need to, maybe talk about to what extent the armed resistance is also a form of self-defense for Palestinians, because the other question would also be, what would have happened in Gaza if there wasn't Hamas, if there wasn't an actual armed group, a Palestinian armed group, that is fighting against the colonial oppression. And so very much as there are UN resolutions, there is international law and the international community, we see in the last now 6 weeks how weak all of these mechanisms are actually put in place to protect people and to protect so-called human rights and people's existence, and how this cannot be applied to Palestinians. So the question really is, what other than armed resistance could Palestinians rely on to even merely survive in this situation?
When the war in Yemen was happening, Elijah Magner, my last question to you. You had obviously U.S. complicity in that war, and we know the way that the U.S. supported Saudi Arabia when it came to the war, and of course that how many Yemenis died as a result. The U.S. in this case with Israel is doing the same. And some are saying, well, the U.S. is now complicit in war crimes. But it did before, it did so in the past. I mentioned the war in Yemen and also other wars. Recently, in the past days, you had 100 State Department and USAID employees who said that Israel is committing war crimes. And you also had that senior State Department official that resigned, saying that, you know, the U.S. is just providing Israel with military arms and arsenal that is committing war crimes. So the question is the U.S. in a corner when it comes to this? Is this time different, given the fact that we have also seen how protests have broken out in so many U.S. cities?
It is important for the audience to understand that nothing has changed, really. What the U.S. is trying to communicate to us is they have a kind of democracy, which is really untrue, because if we look at what the former President Barack Obama, when he came out just a few days ago, and he said the pictures coming from Gaza are unbearable, he was just whitewashing the decision of the of his friend and his member of the party, of the Democratic Party, Joe Biden and his administration, for their unlimited support to Israel because they are facing an election that is coming up next year. And when they leak information about differences at the State Department, again, show that they have this kind of false democracy. But in fact, no, nothing is changing.
All right, very well. We've got to end it. Thank you so much. That's Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Brussels. And thank you, Daniel Yejish, author and researcher from Beirut. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Yikovi Takwe and the team, it's goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Protesters have been flooding the streets of American cities as the deadly Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have claimed more lives, and there's been a growing civilian death toll in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia's RIA Novosti news agency has covered this story and tells us more. A U.S. media report acknowledged ahead of the 2024 presidential election in the United States, voters in key states are increasingly weary of their country's involvement in foreign conflicts. Protesters have been flooding the streets of American cities as the deadly Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip have claimed more lives, with a growing civilian death toll in Gaza. With Israel pummeling the Gaza Strip with retaliation strikes in the wake of the surprise Hamas operation on 7th of October, Palestinian and anti-Zionist communities in the United States and college campuses have been engulfed by emotions and protested against Israeli crimes in the Gaza Strip. As U.S. President Joe Biden called on his nation to stand with Israel and with Ukraine in an address from the Oval Office, claiming that we are facing an inflection point in history. Joe Biden also pitched to Congress a $105 billion military aid package and referred to further assistance funneled to the Kiev regime as a so-called smart investment that would pay dividends for future generations. But a majority of the American people fail to see just how the well-being of their country ties in with the endless support being given to Ukraine and to Israel. The report said interviews with voters in key swing states have revealed the consternation they feel over the implications of widening conflicts both in West Asia and in Eastern Europe. Many reportedly unabashedly revealed that they are disgusted with the ongoing political process in their country and believe that domestic problems in the United States, such as inflation, hit closer to home. And that is what the Biden administration and whoever enters the White House after the 2024 election should be directing their efforts towards. The White House has asked Congress to allocate $105 billion in additional funding for the Ukraine war and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, for Taiwan and the crisis at the U.S. southern border with Mexico. Meanwhile, the United States has a national debt amounting to a whopping $33 trillion. Inflation remains high in the United States, and the U.S. president's much-touted Bidenomics appear to be steering his country into a recession. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Voters in Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Arizona were described as having deliberately turned their television screens on mute while the 80-year-old Democratic President of the United States, Joe Biden, made the case for splurging taxpayers' hard-earned cash on aid abroad. According to data from Nielsen, in fact, some 20 million people took the time to watch President Biden's recent primetime address on major television networks. This is half the number that listened to former President Donald Trump's 2019 primetime address. When questioned about Biden's speech, given against the backdrop of a speakerless House, a narrowly dodged and still looming government shutdown, and economic woes plaguing the country, wondered why the commander-in-chief wasn't talking about the homeless problem or gang violence in the United States or trying to solve the opioid crisis in the U.S. One entrepreneur was cited as saying, "Why aren't people noticing what's going on around them? We're at war with ourselves." Other voters agreed that the president's appeal for mind-boggling supplementary military aid to Ukraine and Israel was going to be a hard sell. A voter was cited in the media report as saying, "We've got two wars going, everything's screwed up, and we've got to give money to Israel. We've got to give money to Ukraine. We've got to take care of the whole world." Other voters voiced the opinion that Biden's weakness as a president had fed into the war and chaos, and people don't fear us. Many were not at all optimistic about what the future held amid the turmoil in West Asia, coupled with America's internal problems, saying that it's going to get worse. Doug Bando, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute and former special assistant to then-US President Ronald Reagan, wrote in a US media report, as recent policymaking regarding Ukraine and West Asia conflagration has shown, Washington's war party threatens military action should other states reject the US-constructed so-called rules-based order. He underscored, "Some members of this militaristic machine avidly campaign for war, the bigger the better," pointing out that such warmongers in Washington care little about the lives of others, at least if they're Africans, Arabs, and Asian. He emphasized how the American administration, like in the recent case with Biden's Oval Office address to the nation, positioned almost every fight abroad to be in the country's vital or existential interest. Doug Bando said, "Most of the cases are anything but. Ukraine's collapse would have minimal impact on America's security. Moscow has no reason for war with the United States. There are no territorial disputes between us." Doug Bando stressed, "In Washington, the credibility issue has become the kitchen sink argument for endless war." Doug Bando wrote, "Yes, the conflict might not be in America's interest. It might be consuming good lives after bad interventions. It might be wasting vast amounts of cash. It might have no apparent endpoint after months, years, or even decades of fighting." Bando added, Stupid and unsustainable commitments that no longer serve its interests need to be abandoned by Washington, allowing it to serve its own people. Doug Mando added, young Americans' lives should not be sacrificed to pay for the war party's misdeeds.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. See, I offer my son to you. Only to you I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you. You who have my roots, Palestine. Tears and your brother's cry have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land. Our
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel continues its brutal war against the Gaza Strip as the death toll from the regime's indiscriminate strikes hits 13,000, 5,000